Hey, folks, thanks for tuning in to another episode. This is Mike Lafferty, host of the Vigilance Press podcast. With me today, I have a usual guest, Jason Tondreau of Dr. Comics on Blogspot.com. How you doing, Jason?
I'm swell.
And we have a very special guest, Scott Lobdell, esteemed comic book writer. How you doing, Scott?
I am twice as swell as Jason.
We got the calipers out.
I might be three times as swell as you. I'm not sure. We'll find out as the interview progresses. Is called an interview or a blogcast, or what's the word now?
I was going to call it a podcast, but we could use a different word if it makes you more comfortable.
I like blogcast. Sounds awesome.
Okay.
If we make the O into an A.
Has anyone ever used blogcast yet?
I think you termed it, man. You won the internet today.
So let it be written, so shall it be done.
So, Scott, if you don't mind, can we talk about the new DCU right off the bat?
Talk about which?
Your role in the new DC Universe.
Oh, yeah, sure, why not?
Okay, so you're doing two books. The first one's Titans, and the other one is Jason Todd and the Rebels.
Oh, my God, what poor research. I'm actually doing a third book called Superboy.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Well, I go to Bleeding Cool every day. I didn't catch that. That's what I get for having a day job. I'm sorry.
You are the only guy.
I'm the only guy.
Yeah. In fact, everybody on the internet, raise your hands if you knew that.
I hang my head in shame. So.
Well, you know, yeah. Actually, it's funny because when I was offered Titans originally, I asked if I could do Superboy because I hate whenever I'm like reading a team book and a solo book, and you know the team with the character in it is on Earth, and then you read the solo adventures and they're off in Mars, and you kind of have to decide for yourself which is actually happening and which is kind of a story. And so I don't think anybody knows this. I was originally asked to do Teen Titans and Firestorm, and then once it was official, I was doing Teen Titans, I championed to do Superboy, and they said that they had one person ask before me, and it turned out to be Jeff Lemire, and he felt that he had already relaunched the character only a few months before, and he didn't want to do it again.
Yeah.
So he went on to do the Frankenstein and the Animal Man, and I was allowed to do Superboy, so that's how I got the mysterious.
Well, that worked out well for you. That worked out well for you.
Yeah. And for Superboy.
I totally know what you mean about keeping kind of the characters in sync over multiple books, because I mean, I grew up reading Avengers, and so I would see Iron Man and Thor, and they were all off doing their own adventures, and then I would read Avengers, and I was like, well, wait a minute, how can this all sort of make sense? So I totally see what you mean.
Well, and I think that was fun, too, like the Avengers when they would have, you know, every once in a while you can get an Avengers that was just the Avengers that were in that book, you know, like Vision and Scarlet Witch and Beast and Moondragon, and that was always, you know, Yellow Jacket, and you know, but now it's, now Avengers seem to be made up of only people, not only, I shouldn't say that. You know, between Wolverine and Spider-Man being in the Avengers and then being in two or three dozen other books. But to their credit, they still have, you know, Spider-Woman and, you know, other obscure characters that only appear in that series. So.
Yeah, I think Wolverine has mastered time travel. That's really the only explanation for how he's in so many places at the same time.
You know, it's funny. I got to tell you, as I'm talking to you, I'm kind of trying to edit myself and not be disparaging of other books, because that's what people do all day. They talk about the books they don't like.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's funny because when I was first starting out, I would complain about a particular book. And the people around me would be like, well, what do you know? You never did anything. You know anything. What are you talking about? You know how to write comics. And then when I was writing the X-Men, I would still complain about things I didn't like. But suddenly everybody's attitude towards me was like, oh, you write the X-Men, so you think you know everything. And I'm thinking, well, it's funny because I still have the same opinions I had when I wasn't writing anything. But yeah. Now people's perception of it was, you know, that you knew everything. And then for years, when I was not writing a lot of mainstream superhero comic books, I would complain about things I didn't like. And people's attitude was like, oh, well, you're washed up. What do you know? You don't know. You're just bitter. And it made me laugh because I'm thinking, wow, it's funny because I've always had the same set of opinions about things, but people's perception of my opinions changed over the years. So
You're either ignorant, a snob, or sour grapes.
Yeah, and the truth is I'm all three, so that's kind of... but so here we are on the day of, blogcasts and, interviews, and so I think I just have to be more aware of how I sound. So, but sometimes I say what I think is just being funny and silly, and then people list, read about it later, and they're like, God, what an attitude. And I'm like, dude, I was totally joking. So that doesn't always come off.
Yeah, sometimes things get lost in translation. But, hey, can I ask you about Red Hood and the Outlaws?
You certainly may. Go ahead.
All right. Well, Jason Todd, Arsenal, and Starfire. I'm seeing Jason Todd and Arsenal. I'm thinking, okay, this is a team for angry sidekicks. I'm wondering if maybe Spoiler will show up there eventually.
If it will?
Oh, well, Spoiler. She was Robin for like 2 minutes before they killed her. And
Was she angry, though? Was she an angry sidekick?
Not really. She was pretty eager and excited. I was thinking if it's a team for resurrected sidekicks. Although I guess you got Starfire, so she's not really a resurrected sidekick. So.
Was Roy ever resurrected or no? I know he had his arm ripped off. I don't remember him being.
That's a good point. I guess only his arm's being resurrected. I don't think Roy's ever died.
Yeah, just his arm.
Okay, so his arm's back from the dead, but the rest of him never died.
Yeah. Actually, if you look right close, there's a lot of tattoos on that arm. I'm wondering if perhaps that we're going to remove the tattoos and his arm will come off. So someone asked me to do a sketch of him because I do sketches at conventions.
Yeah.
And I had a sketch of somebody asked me to have him do a sketch of him holding his missing arm. And so I drew him in the new alpha and he's holding his arm and I wrote, oh, no, not again. So.
Nice.
Now, this book that particular book, to me, it seems like it's sort of the spiritual successor to The Outsiders.
It may seem that way. I mean, I will tell you, I've never read an episode of The Outsiders.
Okay.
I'm sorry, read a single issue of The Outsiders.
Yeah.
So I don't, that may there may be some kind of cosmic bookend to it, but I don't know. The Outsiders kind of always struck me as, Batman kind of corralling these kind of off-center characters and trying to help them make the best of themselves, whether he was in the thing or not. This series is really about Jason, who's kind of just trying to live his life, and invariably these two people, insist on hanging out with him, and they don't really have anything else going on in their lives, and so they become, I don't know, they become part of his entourage, really, and they're in his life, and he tries to extricate himself from that, but they don't let him, so. But having said that, he is, he's a character who, if we believe everything that happened to him, started out as a young kid and got brutally murdered and had a mat on for several years, came back from the dead, was trained for a while, has a brutal mat on for a long time. So whether he'd be willing to admit it or not, the fact that, Roy and Corey even find him interesting enough to hang out with is really something that he's kind of, it takes him a while to admit, but he actually comes to appreciate having the two of them in his life. So,
I see.
Because what's that?
No, no, go ahead.
Oh, it's just interesting because, there's a scene I just finished. I just got the artwork in it. I write by plot and then by script, which a lot of people nowadays only write full script. So,
right.
And that way you write it, and then it kind of disappears, and the artwork's drawn, and then you kind of see it when it comes out, and you say, oh, that's interesting. But with me, I get to indicate what it is, and then as the artwork comes in, I get to tailor the script to the art. So it's been really fun because the last 2 days I've been getting this sequence where he's on a plane in the second issue, and he and Roy are talking, and Roy's kind of being his usual, you know, Roy self, and leaves, and this flight attendant named Isabel comes up, and she's totally attracted to Tim and gives him her phone number. And now Tim's looking at the phone number, and here's a guy who, you know, has fought beside Batman, and like they've been beaten to death by Joker, and
yeah.
You know, spent a few years or a bunch of time, you know, being this horribly violent crime lord wannabe, and now this girl who doesn't know any of that just sees this really hot guy sitting in the first class, and she is compelled to give him her number, and you know, Jason's looking at it completely flummoxed, because the notion that some average girl with, you know, no secret identity and no agenda and whatever just, you know, is interested in him is just something that, you know, for all his Batman training and all his experience, he really doesn't have any experience in. So it was things like that that when I was ultimately asked to do Red Hood, that's the stuff that fascinated me, was, you know, really, you know, like, there's a line in the first issue, and I don't really like to talk about lines, but there's a line in the first issue where they're on a beach, and Roy looks around, and he says, wow, this is a really cool spread you have here. I guess I'm always picturing you in some, you know, opera house in Gotham, you know, and, you know, Jason's like, dude, Gotham sucks. Gotham's like, like you want to hang out in your spare time. So things like that I thought, you know, like, this is really, you know, I really wanted to tell this story about a 20-year-old guy who, you know, 20-year-old guy who's had some bad experiences but isn't going to be defined strictly by his past. So it's been really, it's really fun. So
There's a few things that, you know, you were talking about that really made me think. The first is how human it all sounds, you know, and I think that in superhero comics, it's very easy to lose track of that humanity, but I think that, at least for my students, that's what makes the books interesting to read, is when they can recognize a character's humanness when they read it, you know, regardless of superpowers and fantastic costumes and bizarro plots and everything's very Baroque. But if the person that's there seems to have some kind of natural humanness to him that they can relate to. I mean, obviously, none of my students have been killed by the Joker and resurrected, but they have had.
Well, that's the thing. Well, you know, you say that, and that's the thing. It's like when I, you know, like I would, I had to read many, 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 many pages of Red Hood stories when I started to work on it, and it was very interesting to me because it almost seemed like on every panel of his. Story, he was referencing, you know, Batman and his hatred of Batman and how Batman let him down and how he let Batman down and how Joker. I'm thinking myself, like, I don't know, I would, if somebody was carrying on like that, I would, you know, if you're at a, imagine being at a barbecue and you say, hey, dude, what's up? Oh, man, Batman, you'd be like, you know, after 10 minutes, you'd be like, yeah, okay, let me go see who else is here. You know, it's like, you know, it just doesn't, it's not realistic. It's not, you know, nobody is defined by one single event in their life, or you know, maybe I shouldn't say that. Maybe there are people that I don't know any of them. So.
Bruce Wayne.
Bruce Wayne. Yeah, but even Bruce Wayne got to. Well, maybe you're right. Maybe Bruce Wayne does always just talk about it. But
I think it depends on who's writing Bruce Wayne, though.
Yeah.
I mean, the way Grant Morrison's been writing him late, not so much. Jason, you were saying.
Well, I just noted that the other thing that I remember reading, I was reading over. I didn't get to Comic-Con this year, but. But I read a lot of reviews and comments about the various panels, and somebody quoted you as saying that you had said that you didn't do dark. You said, like, I don't do dark. And I thought, well, how can he be writing Red Hood and the Outlaws and not do dark? Because it seems like such an obvious dark book. But what you're describing, now I understand what you mean.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is I think what I said was I'm not really known for doing dark. It's not that I can't. It's just that it doesn't, you know, like, it doesn't, you know, like an angry Jason doesn't hold any interest to me because he becomes, you know, I think there's a danger of becoming one note.
Yeah.
You know, the notion of, a kid who, you know, really was on track to, you know, he started out with a tough life. He was on track to really do something with it. And then, yeah, he did get killed and he did come back to life. And there are choices that he made that brought him to Red Hood that he could have made other choices. And so, you know, here he is. He's at this point in his life and suddenly he becomes involved with these two other people. And what fascinates me is, you know, like when you start rubbing characters up against each other, it's really interesting what happens if you're true to the characters.
Yeah, and Roy and Starfire are such well-defined characters that it's very easy to just kind of write them. You can just put those three characters in a room and it writes themselves.
Well, you know, what's interesting to me too is like when you when people refer to them as Arsenal, it always I always have to think for a second and be like, oh, Arsenal, yeah, that's right. Because I really see Roy as just Roy, you know.
Yeah.
And Corey, I rarely refer to as Starfire, and within the context of the three of them, I don't think that they ever would refer to themselves by their by those names.
Sure.
Even my my editor is writing, and I called them Roy, and she's like, "Well, you know, you have to call him Arsenal because that's his name." I'm like, "Well, it's not really his name, is it? I mean, you know, it's like, you know, I don't really." So to that degree, I don't. I do have to say something funny too. Is like, you know, like when you're in school and you they call you all for your group. You know, you're in the photography club, and like everybody in the photography club, please report to the, you know, gymnasium. And people take your picture, and you know, depending on what you're wearing that day,
yeah,
how you look in your yearbook, and then you're in that yearbook for the rest of your life. And people are like, you know,
yeah, okay.
Like I, you know. And what I find fascinating is that, you know, like, We're doing sketches and, you know, round and round about different characters. And the artist sent in a sketch, and just for a goof, he threw on a baseball cap on Roy.
Yeah.
And it was like, wow, that is really fun. Sure, let him have a baseball cap. Why not? And then, you know, for when it comes out for, like, you know, weeks, it's people are, oh, my God, he's wearing a baseball cap. That's the most ridiculous thing. And I'm thinking, you know what? It's a yearbook photo. The guy showed up today for the cover, and he's wearing a baseball cap. And okay, so now he wears a baseball cap. It just cracks me up, the things that people get so wired about.
Well, it's because we know so little about the book. You know, we have to base. We're afraid to admit that we cannot judge it yet, and so
we judge.
Yeah. So we must judge, and so we have to judge based on the one panel we've gotten. And yeah, you're right. We should just be patient and wait for the book to bloody come out, you know?
We're
going to run out of time, so I have a question for you before Mike cuts me off.
Jason, please go ahead.
Okay. So I'm going to put you in the Wayback Machine for a minute.
Yes.
This is not at all about Red Hood or Outlaws or Teen Titans or New DC Universe.
Uh-huh.
This is about the Fantastic Four.
Okay.
Because I read those issues when you started to write the Fantastic Four, and I loved those issues. And I'm an old school Fantastic Four fan. I have loved that book. Even when the book was awful, I have stood by that book. And I wanted to know why you left so quickly, because it seemed like you were writing some great books.
Oh yeah, it was going to be so much fun. It was strictly a kind of politics. It was I was at the end of my contract at Marvel. And I was fine with writing it for, you know, for 50 issues, like I had done Uncanny.
Yeah.
And my goal was to, actually, I guess it was even more than 50. But my goal was just to, you know, settle in with the Fantastic Four and, you know, and, but as it was, after I decided not to renew my contract, even though I had, I don't know, another 6 months left, they, you know, it was kind of part penalizing. They were like, well, if you're not going to sign the contract, you're not going to write Fantastic Four. So it was partially that, but then it was also partially the notion that they felt that once the contract was up in 6 months, that I would leave on my own accord, and if that was the case and they wanted to be in there, who was going to be there for the long haul? So
they thought you were going to quit. They thought you were going to quit.
Yeah, they thought I was going to quit, and so therefore they wanted to make sure they had somebody in there for the long haul, which turned out to be Chris. I'm not sure how long he was there. So.
Yeah, he was there for a while. What would you have done with that book if you had written it for 50 issues?
Oh, I don't know. You know, what I said at the time was that I was, you know, like, people talk about how we only use 10% of our brains. So that we And my feeling was that, you know, the Fantastic Four, when you look at them as a group, they were the, they were really the center of the Marvel Universe for the longest time. They bought, you know, they were, if I remember correctly, and it's a little fuzzy, but they were, you know, they bought us Galactus, they bought us the Savage Land, they bought us the Inhumans, they, Wakanda came from there, the Subterranea, you know, it's just like Doctor Doom, I mean, everything interesting in the Marvel Universe at one point came from the Fantastic Four, you know, in that first 50 issues. And, you know, like, there's a time over the years where, you know, after Stan did, you know, Spider-Man for all those issues, and, you know, he brought in the Lizard and Dr. Octopus and all those characters. And then there came a point where it started to become like the greatest hits. It's like, you know, Spider-Man would come in and he'd be really tired and he'd open up his closet. Dr. Octopus. Okay, you know, I'm back, and this time I'm back to that. I'm not back to rule the world, I'm going to kill you. And it's like, and suddenly, you know, every time characters showed up, the only reason they showed up on panel was to kill the superhero instead of, you know, them doing something and the superhero rising to the occasion and saving people somehow along the way. It became about, you know, I'm here to kill you.
Yeah.
And so when I got Fantastic Four, my goal was to, my pitch at the time was, everything we know about the Marvel Universe, we've seen, it's only been 10%. So now we're going to go look at the rest of 90%. We're going to find, you know, amazing new worlds and amazing new characters and amazing new, you know, hidden civilizations. And then what I was going to try to do, and if you look at those first three issues, which is kind of funny because there's a template, even then what I was trying to do was to alternate between, an issue where something new is going to, a new character, a new world, new something, and then old, where they used Red Ghost and the Super Ghost. And then there's also that great, I shouldn't say great because you shouldn't talk about yourself to say great, but I do love the whole idea of, you know, the Super Apes having their powers kind of switched over the course of time. And I was really going to start to play around with, you know, what would happen if, you know, Sue started to stretch and, you know, Johnny suddenly started to become more rock-like. And, you know, so I thought that'd be kind of cool, would be what, you know, since we're so little we knew about their powers.
That's right.
You know, maybe by issue 25, they could conceivably have been a different set of Fantastic Four characters, which I think could be kind of interesting.
I mean this in a good way, but it does remind me a little bit of Power Pack.
Oh, is that what happened in Power Pack?
Yeah, in Power Pack, the four kids, they all switched powers after about issue 12.
Oh, yeah? Oh, cool.
And they stayed that way for the rest of the comic.
Oh, cool. Well, you know what's interesting is that, you know, like, I'll read online where they go, oh, you know, like, that's making Teen Titans like Young Justice, and, you know, clearly it's like Young Justice, and I'm like, you know what, I haven't seen Young Justice.
I don't mean to imply that you're
No. It's just very, and I'm not saying you do. I'm just saying it's very interesting that, like, you know, sometimes parallel ideas happen, and it's just very interesting because, like, I don't, you know, like, I get, it's kind of funny. It's just, where was it? I was talking to somebody, I was doing an interview today, and they were talking about Robin's wing.
Yeah.
And what's interesting to me is, like, I'm a comic book fan before I'm a comic book writer. Even when I wasn't writing at all, I've spent the last, 10 years going in every Wednesday in the comic book store and just checking and seeing what's going on and being fascinated by things. And so it's interesting to me, like, when a fan will say, you're ruining Tim Drake by giving him wings. That's a scene, and that's ridiculous, and you don't respect the characters, and da-da-da. And I think myself, like, you know what? Like, from a fan point of view, I look at Tim Drake, and I think, you know what? Here's one in the line of, four or five Robins, depending on if you count spoiler. And I can't imagine, like, why we should find it interesting that, you know, four or five people wear the same costume and don't impact on that costume. Otherwise, it's just a guy in a costume. And right. So to me, Tim Drake, what I find fascinating, because he's clearly the smartest of the Robins, and this notion that, Corey flying around with, Dick Grayson cradled in her arms worked for Dick Grayson because he was, more secure in himself, I guess, than Tim Drake might be. But to me, like, Tim Drake is, the same way that Batman drives around in, essentially an armored tank,
right,
crime lab, satellite war room, the notion that Tim Drake would say, this is how Batman gets around and uses his resources to make the best out of his, out of what he has.
Yeah.
I'm going to use these wings because, it's one thing if he gets tossed over a building, Wonder Girl can swoop in and save him, but what happens when Supergirl gets tossed over a building and, he just looks and says, oh, geez, I wish I had a well.
Right.
Maybe I'll take, I'm going to miss
her. Elevator down and put that.
Yeah,
and so to me, like, and that's the thing, it's like, some, like, you were talking about humanism, like, I just try to look at characters as real as I can imagine that they are.
Yeah.
Like, I'll give you an example. There's a, when I first started talking about it, and it's hard to say things without it sound like I'm, slamming on other writers, which I'm not, because it's hard to put out a book every month, and sometimes you write a scene that works for that particular scene, but maybe doesn't, look at a particular angle. But there's a scene where I read where Kid Flash was watching a old movie on TV. And he says, man, this is a classic. You have to sit down and watch this. And I remember thinking, like, I can't imagine, like, I can't imagine Bart ever watching the same thing twice.
Right.
B, like, the notion of watching a video, it'd be like me talking to you going, Bart, and you'd be like, holy moly, I gotta get out of here. So, to me, if Bart wanted to watch a movie, Bart would go to the multiplex and watch all, 13 movie theaters at the same time, and maybe that would maintain his interest long enough to, say, wow, those were really good movies. I loved this movie. I didn't like that movie. This movie's pretty good. I was scared of this movie, but this one was really funny. I was laughing. It was hysterical. So to me, like, that would, if you're going to put Bart, if Bart's going to consume popular culture,
yeah,
that's how he would do it. So sometimes I look at things and I think, why is Bart sitting in front of the TV set? And again, like, that just becomes like a matter of, like, looking at it from, like, a particular human character point of view. So
yeah, that's awesome.
But you know what's funny, too, is it's so interesting. I don't know, like, it's so interesting to me that, like, no one's, I don't know, neither of you called me a hack, but maybe you're just being polite. But it's funny because I'll read that term and people are like, oh, you know, he's such a hack. I'm thinking, I don't know how to consider a hack because, like, I look at every single thing. I'm like, oh, what is this? Oh, is this what he's doing? It's not like, oh, yeah, three characters are in a book and they're going to fight, you know.
Yeah.
You know, Hula Hula Man this month. It's like, you know, I wouldn't say obsessed because I don't obsess, but I certainly do, like, try to look at every single little element that's going on. And
yeah.
For some reason, you know, it doesn't, my girlfriend gets upset at me because sometimes Google Scott Lefdell hack, because I think it's funny, and I'll sit there and I'll read all, like, pages and pages of insult, and it's just, you know, it just fascinates me that, you know.
Doesn't that drive you crazy?
What's that?
Doesn't that drive you crazy?
No, I mean, it's kind of fascinating. It's fascinating because it's like, you know, it's, a friend of mine just told me, just today, it's a message me, and I forget what the quote was, but he goes, it's so interesting to read because I talk to you and I know you, and then I read these things, and I feel like I'm, you know, reading about something completely different. And that's kind of how I feel. I mean, it's very interesting that, you know, like I'll give you an example. We were talking about page rates today, and when I started, I was making $35 a page, which was, money that, I was doing stand-up comedy at the time, and I would tell people that I was making just enough writing comics and just enough doing stand-up comedy that I had just enough to starve. And, you know, I got into comic books because I loved, you know, the idea of comic book writing. And at the time, it just started royalties, and we would all call each other up and we'd laugh and laugh because, you know, the feeling for comic book royalties at the time were like, you will get 1% if the book sells 100,000. And we're like, if the United Book sell 100,000. And then the flip side of that was like, if the book sold 400,000, you'd get a 4% royalty. And so then suddenly, you know, a few years later, the book starts selling into, you know, the 700,000 and the millions. And then, yeah, there was a ton of money. But what was interesting to me is that people go, oh, yes, yeah, he writes the X-Men. He's a big whore. I'm like, I didn't, you know, yeah, okay, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that, you know, I got royalties, but that's not why I got into comic books, because none of us did at the time. We were just there because it was a fun way to, you know, scrape by and make a living. And so,
yeah.
It's interesting to look at people's perception, because they'll look at, you know, when I was writing the X-Men, and they think, oh, well, yeah, he had everything handed to him. And it's like, it really wasn't that way at all. It wasn't, you know, I wasn't doing stand-up comedy in the Comedy Cellar and telling all the other comedians that, yeah, what I'm secretly going to do is I'm going to, you know, write the X-Men in 5 years when it's selling, you know, hundreds of thousands of times. You know, it wasn't on it. It wasn't even something, you couldn't even make that up. You wouldn't even think about it at the time. So
right.
The notion of selling, you know, 700,000 copies a month was absurd. So.
What are the goals, sales-wise, for the books you're about to write? How many copies does DC think that they can or want to sell of Titans?
I don't really know. I honestly don't know. I'm not in that. There was a time at Marvel when I was very much in the middle of all of that, but I'm not that at DC. I'm just a guy writing comics. So
yeah, that's probably better anyway. You know, that's. It sounds to me like you're just a craftsman, you know, and you want to pay attention to the product and the story that you're making, and you know you want to pay attention to all the little corners and all the little bits of it, and make certain that it's as good of a story as you can make it. And if
I can tell you, I do miss being a little closer to the center of it, just because I was, you know, like Age of Apocalypse really was a result of mine and Bob just kind of banging ideas back and forth.
I remember that story very well. Yeah.
And we would kind of challenge each other to get more and more, like, crazy until finally, you know, in a fit, we were like, let's cancel all the books and rename them. And, you know, and at the time, people were like, what are you, crazy? You know, now it seems like, again, it seems like you look back and you go, oh, yeah, well, yeah, well, that was this. But at the time, people were like, oh, you are, you know, you're out of your mind. You're going to cancel all the X-Men books. Yeah. And replace them with a title with Blink and Morph and Sunfire and Wild Child on the end of Sabretooth's arm. Yeah, that's a winner. Yeah.
Okay. I'm looking at the clock, and I expect we have to go.
We got the other.
Already? We didn't even talk about anything.
I know. I know. I would keep you for another hour, but Mike's not hitting
them. Oh, we can go another couple minutes.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, Scott, I was just wondering, can we work in maybe a running gag in Red Hood where every once in a while Jason like slips up and calls Roy Speedy? Because that would be hilarious, I think.
Well, you know, it's funny. I actually asked if he could be called Speedy, and I was told no, because there is a Speedy-centric project that doesn't have anything to do with Roy.
Oh, okay.
So I can't...
You heard it
but
here.
Yeah, I would have loved to.
I was going to say, I'm telling all of our listeners that you heard it here first.
Yes, that is the first. I won't tell you the people behind it, but when you hear about it, you'll be like, holy moly, like that.
Well, hey, I'm going to ask you a question you can't answer, but I'm going to ask it. What will we be seeing Wally West showing up in the Titans or the Outlaws?
I don't have any plans for Wally West. I mean, When you said I couldn't answer, I can certainly answer that I have no plans for him. So.
Okay.
But whether, I mean, I don't know. You know, the thing is that these Titans are getting together for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
But within the DC Universe, my understanding is that there has been a, you know, there have been different permutations of the Teen Titans. You know, it's kind of interesting to me because, like, you know, you and I can read the George Perez Teen Titans.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Mark Wolf and George Perez Teen Titans.
Yeah.
And think, okay, that was, you know, 20 years ago, and it was amazing. It was great comics, and it was stellar. But, you know, Dick hasn't been around for 20 years, and Corey hasn't been around for 20 years, and Raven hasn't been around for 20 years in the DC Universe itself.
Yeah.
And so, to me, I'm completely comfortable with this notion that, yeah, a handful of kids, you know, kids superhero sidekicks had gotten together and, you know, were they brought together by Raven or, you know, whatever. I mean, I don't, to me, it's off the, you know, this is, I'm going to get kicked in the head for this, but, you know, it'd be like if NSYNC was aware that, yeah, there was a Beatles, but it doesn't really impact on us. It's like, you know, it's this notion that, yeah, these characters got together and they did these things, but, you know, we're not living in a world where there's a Titans Tower, and we're not living in a world where the characters shout, you know, Titans, go, and they leap into, you know, whoever they're fighting against. You know, this isn't that's not this version of the Titans, but whether or not that version existed in this DC universe, it doesn't really impact on what I'm doing, so I don't really think about it. I don't think about
your your analogy would be a lot stronger if NSYNC was called the Beatles.
Yes, and if anybody cared about NSYNC, which is, you know, people are going to be like, oh, that does right, NSYNC, like it's NSYNC. I honestly don't know anything about it. I mean, I, you know, NSYNC might be, like me referencing, what's his name, David Johansen or something. It's like, I know nothing about music, so I don't know how good NSYNC is, but I'm sure it'll come back to haunt me. So. What's funny, too, is people, these interviewers send me these questions, and they send, like, you know, 10 questions, and I can't help but, you know, sometimes I answer the idea behind the question rather than the question itself. And
yeah.
People will be like, oh, Scott's avoiding the question. I go,
I didn't avoid the question. I'm answering it. But the thing is sometimes, I think that, and maybe you've had this experience too, like, I think that people have five questions and I answer those five questions. And invariably when I'm doing interviews, it just spirals off into, 10 different directions.
Yeah.
Like, I probably haven't answered hardly any of your questions.
Well,
I didn't answer, but I'm sure the list of questions probably didn't involve that.
Here's a question for you then. If NSYNC maps the Teen Titans, does that make Justin Timberlake
I'm
cyborg?
I'm so sorry that I said it. In fact, I will tell you this. I don't even know. I didn't. Was Justin Timberlake part of NSYNC?
Yeah. Would this make Lance Bass into Beast Boy or Cyborg? Or?
Yes, I know. Yeah, I don't even know who those people are.
He's gone out of his zone, Mike.
Sorry. Hey, yeah. Scott.
Hopefully your fans are going, I get it, but I don't have. I don't have any idea. So now I've totally tanked this whole interview by bringing up NSYNC.
You did not. You did not. I came here with one.
I'll give you a nickel if you edit it all out.
Hey, no, we actually. Vigilance Press is actually a role-playing game company, and that's kind of our stock and trade. I know there are some comic book writers.
Your stock and trade is what? I'm sorry.
Sorry, role-playing games.
Okay.
Recently been a DC, actually a DC Comics.
If you want me to pretend to be Justin Timberlake, it won't happen because I know anything about him.
We could keep going with that joke for a long time, couldn't we? Do you ever have any experience in gaming at all, or not so much?
No, not at all.
Okay, all right, that's cool. Just thought I would ask.
In fact, I've spent more time at an NSYNC concert than I have at a role playing game.
We forgive you.
Thank you. But I mean, it sounds fascinating. I mean, it's like I mean, I do love. What's funny is my brother in law, God bless him, used to go to boat shows. And I'd always be like, boat shows? Like, what is the idea? He was like, yeah, you get to go on the boats, and you get to climb on the boats. It's in the middle of a convention hall.
Yeah.
I'd be like, so you get to get on a bunch of dry docked boats. And I would scratch my head. And it always occurred to me that, there are people who are thinking, like, really, you're the comic book convention of what? You listen to people talk about comic books, and
yeah.
You go through comic book long boxes? Like, what is that? And so anytime I find another subculture, whether it's Ren Faire's or
sure.
Adult video news or something, it's like, it always fascinates me to really just like absorb other things. So I should pay attention to.
Well, I'm within driving distance of you, Scott. So who knows? Maybe one day I'll get you at my table for a game of D&D or something.
Happily, I would. It's like these. I used to love Dig Dug and Frogger and Space Invaders, and I will tell you that I've never played one of those video games where you kick and jump and dive and slam the thing down 30 times and that indicates you're kicking, and then you slam the other one down and it makes you do a double backflip, and I have no experience with those video games at all.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's just interesting to me what the things that are on my radar and things that aren't. So.
Well, as long as you stay busy writing great comics, we'll let you off the hook.
All right.
Well, hey, Scott, I'm sorry I had something going on, but I really love talking to you. This went pretty well. Can we maybe get you back in a month or two?
Oh, for sure. If you want, I don't know, if you want to do it again in that. Few days to answer the questions that you didn't get to because of my flying off into other conversations. I'd be happy to do it because I feel like I kind of when it's a written interview, it's fine because I can just sit there and write.
Sure.
But, and then they could just make it as long as they want. Whereas with a blogcast, is it? With a broadcast, it's you have a certain amount of time, so I don't want to feel like that I didn't provide an interview answering the questions that you wanted. So, if you put this up, or if you want to do it again in a few days, you have my number, and we can figure something out.
Okay, we'll definitely be in touch. Appreciate your time.
Yeah, and, thanks again. It's been great talking to you. It's a real pleasure.
Thank you. All right, hey, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
What are you, I mean, presumably, like you said, you read the interviews, and it's like, oh, he's, you know, he's not, I'm not a dark guy, and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah,
you must have had ideas in your head about what I was, what I am like, or what I think, or how I talk, or whatever. I mean, how did the reality stack up?
No, I didn't really, like, I've never seen you on video, for example, or I haven't read a lot of interviews with you before, so I didn't know how you would be talking. I was mostly thinking of you as the guy who wrote all these great books I like. And your opinions on those books I thought were very insightful on how you write and what your process is and what's important to you as a writer, what you value. And since I'm a writer and I'm a comics teacher, that's the sort of stuff that I wanted. So, you know, you just got finished apologizing because you felt like you hadn't done a great interview. As far as I'm concerned, I got tons of great stuff out of this. So you shouldn't.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Okay. Well, that's exciting.
And I was just suppressing my rage for the horrible things you did to Robin's cape. So.
I know we didn't even get into that. You know what's interesting too is what is it? I try to listen to myself on podcasts sometimes. And after like 10 minutes, I'm like, wow, I would not listen to this if I were someone else. But that's the difference between how we perceive ourselves and how the
rest
of the world.
Yeah.
So. All right, guys. Well, it was a pleasure. And again, if you ever want me, you have my number, and we'll talk.
Outstanding.
Sounds good. Take it easy, man.
Okay. Take care.
Bye-bye.